The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Friday. This is going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to this. A return visit tonight with Joseph Foster and the Bell Labs story. There's some updates as Joe continues to investigate the incredibly secret but all-important past of Bell Labs. If you look under Joseph Foster and guests, the first link you'll see there, the Bell Labs story, breakthroughs, and pictures. Please click on that and pull it up. Let's see. I'm going to try and do that myself. Okay, it goes over here. It's loading. There it is. It will show you what Bell Labs, the facility. Now, this is in Holmdel, New Jersey. It will show you what it looks like from the air. And I want you to take a look at that picture and see what you see from the air. I think you might notice that it looks a little bit like a computer chip. And there's a lot more to it than just that. Let's find out if Joseph is there. Are you there, Joe?
I am, Jeff. It's good to be back.
Welcome back. What you been doing?
Well, I've been keeping pretty busy. I've actually started using a radio telescope that was part of Fort Monmouth.
And, how'd you get hold of that?
It's actually live. Well, it's a 60-foot dish, and it's part of what's called InfoAge. InfoAge is the historical site where Marconi actually did his transoceanic transmission, and that's where he and Sarnoff of RCA fame actually put together their concepts in radio technology. It's a very interesting site. It's part of Fort Monmouth.
Uh-huh.
And, I'll go into it because we mentioned Bell Labs, and Bell Labs and, of course, the Army are pretty much joined at the hip for many of these technological breakthroughs that have taken place over the years.
Right.
Starting with back probably before World War II even. So it's a very interesting topic, and like I said, there's a lot of sidebar stories that that these two entities share.
We've had a lot of
here in Monmouth County.
Yeah, we've had some really fascinating conversations about this. Let's go back to the very beginning. What do you know about Bell Labs? Who requisitioned its construction? Who backed it? Whose idea was it? And why the architecture? What do we know?
Well, okay. Well, the original Bell Labs, and depending on who you talk with, was actually in Lower Manhattan. Okay, it was down around West Street.
Right.
But the actual Bell Labs, that of where the historical significance generally takes place, goes back to the 1920s here in Monmouth County. The original Bell Labs here in Homedale was in a dairy barn.
A dairy barn.
The Genesis was in a dairy barn.
Not quite a computer chip, barn, is it? No.
Not quite. Not yet, anyway. But anyway, that's also where the first television, a long-distance television transmission took place from. And this goes back to the 1920s.
Wow.
You also had the first fax machine, facsimile transmission. You had the first music that was transmitted via radio, all coming out of that particular facility. Now, of course, where it really kind of picked up steam was the development, not necessarily the invention of radar here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Now, depending on who you talk with, a number of people claim radar, but it was actually, I believe it was either Marconi or Tesla.
Right.
At first, to notice that there were certain properties.
Sticky finger Marconi, you mean?
Sticky finger, right.
It is said that he did help himself a little bit to Tesla's brilliance when it comes to radio.
Oh, I don't think he was the only one. I think a number of people took advantage of Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
Tesla's a tragic, he was a tragic figure.
You know what it was?
Absolutely brilliant.
He was too nice. He was a nice guy. He was a nice person. He wasn't an egomaniac like Edison. And people just took him for, they just took him.
Yep. Well, General Electric did quite a number on him, too. Originally, they were backing him on some of his earlier projects. But when he started talking about transmitting free energy, I think that kind of turned them off to that aspect. You know, it's just like telling Exxon or Exxon that you're going to start powering cars with water.
Well, that was J.
Not be happy about that.
And that can be done. We know it can be done. We've talked about that as well. J.P. Yeah. Morgan allegedly cut off the funding and caused Wycliffe to be shut down. It would have worked. There's no doubt about that. It would work today, but as Morgan said, how do we put the meter on it if it's going through the air? How do we measure it? How do we charge for it? I don't know that it was so much GE. It was a combination of things, but you know more about this than I do. I know that George Westinghouse, I believe, was his name, right? George Westinghouse?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, anyway,
I'm not an expert in that area.
Westinghouse really supported Tesla, and Tesla saved Westinghouse's entire operation at one point and didn't want anything for it. He wasn't an American business hustler. He was from Europe and a relatively simple origin with his cosmic mind that was just completely out of time. Strange.
Yeah, and very trusting. As you said, very trusting as well. So,
right.
And you're right. Thank you for correcting me. It was Westinghouse. I said GE, but it was Westinghouse.
Now, looking at
that
this...
pulled the support for his transmission, I believe.
No, it was J.P. Morgan, the banker. Westinghouse supported him. J.P. Morgan was the one. In fact, Orson Welles played J.P. Morgan in the motion picture about Tesla. There's a European-produced film about Tesla. So it was J.P. Morgan, the banksters. Westinghouse had almost went bankrupt, and they owed Tesla an enormous amount of money for his patents and so forth. And George Westinghouse went to Tesla and said, "We just don't have it. We're going to lose the company." And Tesla said, "Don't worry about it. Forget it." And that's how Westinghouse survived. So, credit where credit is due. I agree with you. The Bell Labs story and the photos, if you click on that again, it'll come over as a download. You may have to open it up from a special folder. But look at that opening picture. This is astounding. Do we know who designed that?
Saarinen, a gentleman named Saarinen. But I'm sure he got direction from the Bell Labs hierarchy that they wanted something that would make the statement about, you know, what their flagship product was. And, of course, that's the transistor.
Yeah.
And that is a two-point transistor. Exactly, just like the water tower off in the distance.
What about the water tower? What about the water tower?
The water tower is awesome. The water tower actually looks like a UFO on
looks like
legs.
A mushroom on legs. Yeah, right. Got it.
Right, but it replicates that original transistor that was designed by Shockley and his team.
The famous Shockley. It's the same one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Now.
Well, he did the transistor. And
this is,
of course,
you know,
Bell Labs.
You know what this is reminiscent of? A crop circle.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It definitely has that look to it. I'm not sure if they thought of a crop circle at the time. But
no,
it definitely does. And it's funny because there was a crop circle not too far from there years
look
later.
Look how the perimeter row, all of you are able to look at this, look how the two circular roads around this facility have these beautiful loops in them to transit from one side of the road to the inner side so you can get into the parking areas. This is really a stunning architectural statement, and the water around it, it looks as if it was designed to be looked at from above. And I'm wondering if even the parking rows, the angles that they're on, were done with intent to portray something.
Yes, they were. They absolutely were. It's all part of the transistor. So I think if you took that original transistor and looked at it under a magnifying glass, mm-hmm. you would see something that looked very, very similar to that.
Neat. Now, tell our listeners, Joe, what you do at, first of all, what's the Bell Labs structure, the facility being used for right now? And then what is it that you do there?
Oh no, I'm not. I am not at Bell Labs.
Don't you lead tours there sometimes?
No, not there. That's out at the Evans site. That's out at what they call the Project Diana site.
Okay.
Project Diana is the 60-foot radio telescope that has a very, very interesting history of its own.
All right. That's
all
where you give your tours. I get it. Okay. But without I didn't mean to interrupt you.
The Nike site too.
Okay. Yes.
No,
you do
no
double
problem.
Double time. I want to know about the Bell Labs facility now. What's going on there?
Okay, it was taken over by a developer from local to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And he's actually the third developer that came in there. The other two previous ones were big, and they wanted to tear the building down and put up another smaller office building. And it was just exactly the wrong thing to do. And, of course, the problem that the town had, the town wanted the original site, but they didn't want anybody there. They didn't want any development. They didn't want any houses. They want, it's the old adage, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But what happened was the original two developers finally tired of fighting with the town and trying to come up with a scheme that they could make their money and that, there could be some preservation. Well, finally, I put together something for the mayor at the time with a concept, kind of a concept of maybe what they could use it for, because I was involved with trying to get an innovation zone started because Fort Monmouth closing down as well as Bell Labs. We wanted to find a home for all the technical people that, worked at those two facilities. You're talking about top-of-the-line technical people. The original Silicon Valley was here. It was not out there in, where Silicon Valley is today.
Loopy land.
And, of course, it was anchored by, Bell Labs and, Sarnoff and all these different research and development, Princeton University and so on. Well, anyway, the concept was floated by this developer that was more local, and he took it and ran with it almost perfectly. And it became what it is today. They're renting out space. They have high-tech companies in there. They also have some retail on the floor, eating places. The library, the local library is there. Some legislative offices are in there. So, but the building itself has been maintained. Matter of fact, they're going to be upgrading some of the energy-related stuff. It's 2 million square feet of building, four buildings under glass, basically. And so they've really preserved it, and people are flocking to it. They're filling it up. It looks like it's going to be successful. They're going to be building a hotel on the roof, a pocket hotel.
They're going to, you mean,
a phenomenal place.
It's going to be new construction on the roof?
No. Well, on the roof, yeah, there'll be some, but it's going to be blended into the original design. I've seen the designs, and it's going to be nice.
Joe, I'm looking at
it's going to be...
Excuse me, we got a little bit of a delay here. I'm looking at the inside pictures after the first aerial shot, the three that are in a group. We got the aerial shot top left, and then bottom we've got a guy in a white... looks like a white shirt and a tie looking over something. And then on the right, we have a picture of four stories. And we're looking up at the clouds through the open, the glass ceiling. Is that an actual photograph, or is that a digital rendition of what might be? Is that actually a photograph of the interior of Bell Labs?
That is the, yes, when it was actually still Bell Labs. And you have a big atrium there. Now, this is also towards the end when Lucent was moving out, I believe, because there used to be trees. They used to have gardens in there and everything else. It was just an incredible place. It was six floors, so you had the floor.
Oh, I do. I see it. It's six stories.
Down.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. All right, for all of you who aren't able to see this, it's like being inside of a two or three story mall, shopping mall, and you look down and you'll see an open area at the bottom, and then you have a perimeter that runs four sides, and each floor, each story has a complete walk around. And how many square feet is this?
It's 2 million square feet under glass.
Wow!
So it's a large building, and during its heyday, it had seven wet labs, and it was just an incredible place. The top of the line scientists and engineers that were working in that place. And it was a fun. You talk to some of the people that worked there, especially the ones that were developing new technologies. They would come in and they'd say, gee, we have an idea. Let's try this. And they would actually be funded for it, and they would be going able to go off and do their design work and come up with some of the things that they came up with. Unfortunately, that is no longer the case. And Dr. Lucky was one of the directors that I know. And basically what he said that Bell Lab, there will never be another Bell Labs.
He said, when did it open,
the way
Joe?
Everything is... 1960 is when the new building was built.
That's astonishing. Look at the architecture on that. 1960. That is really wild. Mm-hmm. Six stories high. And now you're saying that the uppermost story, or part of it, may be converted into a new hotel.
Yeah, it's going to be a pocket hotel, and it's going to be a good place to have conferences. I'm thinking you get UFO conferences out there. Boy, what a mecca it would be.
Oh, no, good idea. How far from George Filer's house would this be?
This is about 60 miles, I guess, 50 or 60 miles.
Let's put that
He's
B
close.
In George's bonnet. And Frank Chile.
Oh, he organized. I already did.
All right, we got to organize something big there. I'm sorry that the atrium has been denuded of its trees and greenery. That should be reestablished. That's a gimme. You want trees in there. You want greenery and maybe some ponds and waterfalls. It's probably something like it originally looked like. But to go back to 1960, 60 years ago, and look at the vision. This is stunning.
To give you an idea, the plantings, the way it was designed, to be coming into its own now. So the place is absolutely gorgeous. The trees are all where they're supposed to be. Everything was so well thought out that they were thinking 50 and 60 years down the road, what is it going to look like? You know, absolutely gorgeous place.
Well, being a tree planter, you have to do that. You put in this 2 or 3 foot tall tree, and, you know, if you can stand the time, it goes slowly. But in, you know, 5 or 10 years, you've got a beautiful tree growing, and you'll see the final expression of the vision. It does take time with trees. I wish that we got to get some pictures of the original with the landscaping inside. But that being said, this is a real national treasure, this building.
It is. And like I said, I'm absolutely thrilled that the developer that came in there did what he did. It's not, is it perfect? I mean, no, because they put a lot of housing around it, upscale housing, but it's something that, you know, all things being equal, it would have been ideal not to have to do that, just keep it the way it was. But part of the concept, I was actually, my Dutch uncle was Admiral Paul Gaffney. And we were trying to put together this innovation zone. And looking at this, as well as Fort Monmouth, as anchor areas to retain high-tech companies and bring companies in, wanted to create a living space where you could have graduate students, young graduate students, and their families being able to move into affordable structures at a place like this, where they could open up their own labs, offices, and so on, and still share with the retirees that used to work there. You know, and you actually almost have something like that now, which is nice. You have a lot of young people coming in there. You have a lot of technologically adept people out there
yeah.
now.
Open up
and,
the
so
for our listeners, open up the second link under Joseph Foster while we take our break here. We got break, Joe. Come right back.
Oh, okay.
But open up that second link and you will see, it's a PDF, you'll see some remarkable photographs in a much larger format. So do that. We'll come right back with Joseph Foster in just a couple minutes. Okay, and we're back with Joseph Foster. The stunning history of Bell Labs in Holmdel, New Jersey, is the second link under his name. Please click that open. It's a PDF. Take a look. Scroll down. You'll see the water tower. It does look like a UFO. Where in fact, did or do we think the UFOs landed so the tall whites could come out and go to work with the scientists in the building without being noticed too much?
It's funny you should mention that. First of all, like I said, coincidences. First of all, Bell Labs is within a couple of miles of the Navy Road. I spoke about a Navy Road in a sighting that I had in 1958, just a couple miles away. And that Navy Road links the Naval Ammunition Depot at Earl in Colts Neck with its pier facilities 13.2 miles to the north on Raritan Bay,
yeah,
where the pier is, and that's where they load and unload the ammunition.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, back in those days, there were interesting munitions that were being stored and shipped from the Cold Sack facility to the Raritan Bay facility in Middletown, a couple miles up. These are all linked, and of course, there's been sightings, UFO sightings in that area ever since I can remember. So from 58 through, I'm going to say, 97, which is when they, I believe that's when they removed the nuclear weapons from Earl.
Uh-huh.
And of course, in 1974, we had in 1974, we had 60 Nike Hercules missiles within,
yeah,
a 15 or 20 mile radius of Bell Labs.
Well, Bell Labs had to be a big X on the Soviet military's nuclear destinations, shall we say, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
As was the Fort Monmouth and the Communications and Electronics Command,
mm-hmm,
where radar was developed and perfected. The Mogul balloons were actually designed and built at Fort Monmouth. And, of course, that's of Roswell fame.
Well,
and,
that was one of the excuses they used to try to explain away Roswell.
One of the excuses, but the technology did exist, and it was used for what they said,
mm-hmm,
it was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
then, yeah,
you know, but part of that. But so you had all of these things that kind of come together.
Question.
And you had the 60 nuclear-tipped missiles.
Uh-huh.
Not counting the 89 nuclear-tipped missiles down in McGuire, down closer to where George was. So the landings, if there were going to be landings, if there were going to be people, Nordics or whatever, it would actually be relatively easy to get them spirited into those facilities. And, you know, and were they there? They very well may have been. I have never had a report. Nobody's ever come up to me and said, yeah, I worked with an alien.
I have.
But it definitely is in scope.
Two things I want to say. First, the water tower, no coincidences, looks exactly like a ship.
Like a UFO.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Now, secondly, and you could look at the legs as being beams of light if you wanted to.
Yep.
Secondly, I am told that, we'll call them the Nordics just for fun, are in fact here and are in fact working with advanced top-level physicists and others in the sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And it is,
yeah,
a common daily interaction. They're here. They can pass. They'll look enough like us to pass, except they're a bit tall. So, yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise to anyone.
I do have a story for you then.
Uh-huh.
I do have a story for you. And this just happened maybe a little less than a year ago. My wife was working down at Aberdeen Proving Ground.
Uh-huh.
And she was working late one night, and she left her office, and she was walking to her car, and everybody was gone by this time. And she said that there was this tall gentleman that walked toward her. He was crossing the parking lot. And he was very tall. He had a white shirt and a tie on, black pants, very tall. And just the way he said hello to her, she said, he was the strangest person I've ever met. This could be one of those Nordics.
Yeah, sure.
Because Aberdeen Proving Ground, of course, you have the CERDEC over there. You have all this technology that was being developed at Fort Monmouth is now being developed down there.
Yeah, nothing would surprise
me.
No, I'm told by people who are well-placed that they're here and they're working with us. I don't know if they're,
mm-hmm,
working with the Russians or not. I don't know, but they're certainly working over on this side.
Yeah. I've got a theory about all this. I mean, it's that's for another part of the conversation probably. But back to this. I'm sure you want to continue on with the Bell Labs.
Sure.
Or yes. Do you want to hear the...
No, you've already put your foot in it. You're going to have to tell us the story sooner or later, so you might as well tell it now.
Okay, well, you watch these shows. You watch Ancient Aliens, and it sounds like they're nibbling on the edges. You know, they kind of have it right, but they don't they haven't taken it all the way as far as it really could or should go.
Right.
And what got me thinking about this is that here we are, we're sitting at the edge of our galaxy. You know, we're a little third-rate, you know, white dwarf sun that's extremely young compared to the millions of other stars that are perhaps closer to the center of the galaxy. And that means you have, and the way they're finding planets now in all these different solar systems, that they're much more widely distributed as our technology gets better. We're discovering more and more, even to the point where they're talking about Dyson spheres. You know, so if this is in fact the case, and let's take it to that logical conclusion, that obviously we're not alone. And that we're obviously not very far advanced. Matter of fact, we may never make it that far, you know, unless we get our act together. But let's say, for argument's purposes, that some of these civilizations that are out there could be in the millions of years. I mean, they could have been in space millions of years ago, which is some of the things that are
billions of years ago.
Exactly. And thinking about why would they want to come here in the first place? You know, everybody, you know, all the theories you have about, well, it's our water, it's our mineral resources, it's our, you know, whatever. The truth of the matter is that probably is not really the reason. This may be nothing more than a very, very long-term, empirically correct study of anthropology, celestial anthropology. And, you know, if they started a million years ago, you know, if they started experimenting genetically with the bipedals that were, you know, on the face of the Earth at the time and genetically modifying them, giving us, you know, parts of their DNA, and then all of a sudden looking and seeing how things shake out. You know, I mean, why do we have like four major races? You know, well, what was that all about? And then if, what is the technology that has been shared over the years with various civilizations, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Egyptians, the Hindu, the Indians, and so on. There's got to be more to this, that if they're seeding for a reason that's not necessarily, I don't think, to make us that much better, but I think they want to see how we react, how we deal with the differences of us. Yeah, the politics and everything.
Somebody's doing
politics, forget that.
Somebody's doing a doctoral thesis on us. It's an experiment.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that, you know, if it's gone on for a million or a billion years, what's to say that it won't go on for another billion years?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, the whole thing, you know, we operate on our scale. But if you look at everything that's going on, you look at all the UFO sightings, you look at the interactions that, you know, the way the interactions take place, it's a bit and pieces here and there. They make themselves known to one group, maybe not another group. The whole thing, it looks like a gigantic experiment. And it looks like we're the Jurassic Park of the universe.
Okay, that's good. The other thing is we're literally destroying our home planet. We're destroying our planet, and I don't. Sad to say, see any way that it's going to be reversed without severe outside intervention, which I would welcome. I think we've really forfeited the right to call ourselves the sentient caretaker species on this planet. We've lost it. There's an element among us that is evil and satanic and Luciferian and any kind of negative word you want to use. That's the truth.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't be in more agreement with you. I mean, that is so true. I mean, nothing makes sense. The politics don't make sense. The interactions, why would we throw everything away just because we don't like somebody? You know, I mean, are we that self-destructive that that is in our DNA? I don't think it is.
I think
it's something that we have to overcome.
I don't think we're going in the wrong direction now. The world right now, in my view, is being reformatted. There's a great transition ruthlessly underway right now to destroy those, yes, those glimmering, wonderful memories of how things were 60, 80, 100 years ago in this country. Those memories will be gone. They won't even exist in the minds of the younger generations coming up, the millennials and Gen X or Gen Z. It's not going to happen. They're just going to be subservient. They're being taken down intellectually, physiologically. They won't live as long. Their health is being compromised. They're being toxified and poisoned to death constantly by food, what they call food, and many other factors now. So I just don't see it. We're going in the wrong direction. So there is a transition underway now, and it's going to end up with us, the so-called dominant species on the planet, ending up being utterly subservient to whoever and whatever that darkness is.
Yes. No, you're exactly spot on with that. And it is. I mean, you know, it's funny because politically, not getting into the politics of it, but the people talk about the 1%. Well, they're kind of right, but they're coming at it from the wrong direction. That 1% is actually 0.1% that controls everything.
There you go.
It has nothing to do with the politics that you and I deal with. We come from it, you know. We like to believe that we can have integrity and that we can vote that way. If we're elected officials, we can govern that way. The problem is that has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. You know, we're fed basically by both sides. The yin and yang is just to keep us moving in the direction that somebody wants us to go in, not necessarily that it's the right direction. Now, you can sit there and say, well, yeah, this is why did the Georgia Stones, why did they pick 500 million people for the optimum number for the Earth? Well, that came out of a Rand Corporation study in the 1960s, you know, and it's talking about everything that was going on in the 60s, the starvation in Africa, the droughts and everything. That study came out, and it came out with recommendations from the mid-60s to the government, because they only do government studies, and they were making recommendations. You know, just like the GMOs, you mentioned the GMOs. You know, they didn't just come out of nowhere. They were actually pushed in the direction of creating those things.
Yeah.
And ostensibly, and this is arguably, ostensibly is to alleviate the suffering of the world, the millions in impoverished nations where they don't have food.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, unfortunately, but now, there's another agenda. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are we look at the I'm looking at the technological breakthroughs, well known. Those breakthroughs were not all at Bell Labs, or were they? 1947, 1958, Telstar 1, cellular technology, 1962, 64.
They absolutely were.
They're all Bell Labs. Telstar, let me read these. I'm going to read these. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to understand.
Okay.
Bell Labs, the building was finished in its current incarnation in 1960. But the predecessor locations were the home to other brilliant scientists, maybe working with a little assistance, maybe not. 1947, Shockley, Bardeen, and Brattain invent the first transistor. Now, there's a lot of argument about that. Was it actually invented solo in terms of a human invention, or do we have a little nudge? And too much happened too fast. You're there, Joe, you know. Then we got lasers in 58, Telstar 1, the first orbiting comm satellite. It goes on and on. You can read it. What do you think? We've had help.
Well, I really do think we had help. But the problem, the way it was explained to me by a physicist, he said that you couldn't take something and invent it overnight with everything else that you would need to go into that transistor. Okay, now the transistor was 1947, as was the Roswell crash And I think what's been happening is they always associate the Roswell crash with that particular breakthrough. The reality is, though, if you need, say you need 5 or 6 years to develop sub-technologies and capabilities in order to have that finished product, well, you can go back and you can find that there were a number of crashes that go back 5, 6, 7 years. 1941, there was
Cape Girardeau.
Cape Girardeau. Also, the Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
There was two crafts that supposedly were brought down then.
Yeah.
Now, either one of those, or the one out in New Mexico, there was also, where was it? There was another one.
Socorro, and there's another one at the Aztec in Mexico.
Right. So you had ample number of UFOs that came down in this country
mm-hmm.
that would have been scoured and gone over and taken up to Wright-Patterson or whatever, and then distributed. Then the technology could have been distributed for the reverse engineering and commercialization.
Right.
So I have no problem believing that that particular technology did not come from... First of all, Shockley supposedly wasn't that bright a guy. Now, whether it was his team, but he did not have the reputation of being the super physicist.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, that's an argument on saying that somebody had help. Now, the other thing is because, and this goes back to something you were saying earlier. I mean, if there were, say, Nordics that were spending time at Bell Labs or other labs, Fort Monmouth or whatever, and they were providing some type of expertise, much like the Douglas Aircraft, the folks that were embedded in Douglas Aircraft there. If that was the case,
like William Tompkins.
Like Bill Tompkins, sure. And they would be generating that type of technology that would be giving them the leg up. Now, you also mentioned something earlier on as well about the Russians and the Chinese and the Japanese and everybody else like that. My sense is that they're going to everybody. It doesn't make any difference. Let's say there are 56 different species visiting us. Some are good, some are bad, some are who cares.
Right.
And some of them are giving technology, others are being totally oblivious to giving any assistance or anything.
Right.
Well, somebody is going to. And that means they're probably spreading it out because one group may be more, you know, closer in their philosophical outlook to, say, the Nazis. Because somebody was helping the Nazis out, weren't they?
Well, I look at them as German scientists, but because they weren't
right.
all necessarily members of the party.
Right, right. But again, I mean, World War II, you always equate that with Hitler and the Nazi party, and they were getting some type of technological support, according to Wernher von Braun. I mean, he said
right.
that.
Allegedly,
in a cryptic way.
The lizards were involved with them, reptilians.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to know, but with what they did in the 30s, and I've got that little clip of a video of a German flying disc, and we understand paperclip and almost a thousand of the top German engineers and scientists came over, including
mm-hmm.
von Braun.
Yep.
And who was I think he's the first president or second director of NASA. Who was it? Dr. Kurt Debus.
Was it Willie Lee?
No,
oh,
not Willie
okay.
Lee. Dr. Kurt Debus. Who was Dr. Kurt Debus? Dr. Kurt Debus was the director of the entire Peenemünde project for Germany during the
okay.
war. He was the director okay. of NASA for 13 years.
Well, yeah, it gets even better. Fort Monmouth had 56 German scientists and engineers, and they were still bringing them over as part of Operation Paperclip, supposedly up until 1960.
I wouldn't be
1960.
Surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I think the total number, I think we had 1,400, the rocket scientists and engineers down in White Sands that were originally brought over to White Sands, including Wernher von Braun and Willie Ley and a number of others. There were about 12 or 1,400 of them.
Right.
But there were supposedly around 12 or 14,000 brought over that were medical doctors, that were mathematicians,
correct,
physicists, so on.
And many more than that were allowed to migrate to Argentina, Paraguay, mm-hmm, and other places in South America. This is a fact. Hitler died in 1962. We know that now. He lived his first 10 years in Bariloche, in that beautiful home,
yep,
on that huge lake, and had to move in 1955, yep, up to near Cordoba, and died in 1962.
Now, what's wrong with that picture?
Well, speaking of pictures, I have two or three photographs of him taken in 1947 at the hotel in Cordoba owned by his very close friend, the Eichhorns.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I do. I've got them.
It's amazing. And, you know, you have to say, they couldn't have stayed hidden that well. They couldn't have gotten spirited out. There was a movie that was made about it. The Omega Factor? No.
It was all a trade-off for technology. Yeah, it was just a trade for technology. Common sense. You do that, or you lose it all to your enemy, the Soviet Union. They got a pretty good chunk of it, but we got the majority of it. So there you go.
Yeah, we did. Yep.
Okay, hold on.
Absolutely.
We will be back. Okay. Another hour to go with Joseph Foster in just a few minutes.